Welcome to the next episode of Flintco Talks. It's your boy Dano. I'm here in Austin today, and I have got Richard Jaggers, the president and CEO of Alvarisi Corporation, in the house. Richard, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Dan. Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity to join you.
Absolutely. It's great to see you. It's great to have you here, and I'm thoroughly excited about the conversation we're going to have. So as we get started, let's talk a little bit about kind of your upbringing, so people listening that maybe don't know you can learn to know you a little bit better.
Sure. Born in England, grew up in a town called Telford that's about 30 miles west of Birmingham, might be perhaps a city of a little bigger size that folks know.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up in, I guess, what would be called here, a blue-collar working-class background. My father was originally a mechanic and then an electrician. Worked in manufacturing after that for a long time. For about the last, 10, 15 years of his life, ran his own small business for a while. Never really brought him much financial success from that, but brought him a lot of fulfillment, a lot of enjoyment, which was really, really good to see.
Mm-hmm.
My mother worked part-time, stayed home and looked after myself and my two older sisters. Got two sisters that are 5 and 6 years older than me. Great environment, a lot of appreciation of the upbringing that I had. I guess, we didn't really have a lot from a financial perspective. Mm-hmm. Grew up in a fairly modest environment, but in an environment that from a values perspective, from an upbringing perspective, I have a lot of appreciation of. Both my parents in that regard were strong influence on me. My father in particular, I think still to this day, is actively a really strong influence in my life. So mm-hmm. Very appreciative of that.
That's excellent. I love to hear the story, especially coming from kind of a working man's family, right? I mean, it's kind of like construction was kind of, you were brought up in it, around it, all of that stuff. Thank you for sharing those memories. Let's talk a little bit about your history now. You were at Flintco for a while in Alvarisi. Let's talk a little bit about kind of how you made the transition to Flintco and between Flintco and Alvarisi and really into what your role is today.
Yeah, if I give you just, a little bit of backstory to that. I started off in manufacturing, was in manufacturing for quite a long time. Knew that I enjoyed working for companies that did something tangible. Just for me personally, that made it resonate more. It made it more relatable. I enjoyed being part of something that created something, I guess, and got that pleasure out of manufacturing, and then had opportunity when I was around 30 to move into construction, and that had that same dynamic, which was appealing. Joined Balfour Beatty at that time, so what was 98. Spent 14 years in total with Balfour Beatty. I had a little 3-year sabbatical in there that I slipped away and worked for somebody else. They were kind enough to forgive me doing that and allowed me to come back. Really good experience, lots of appreciation for that. Worked alongside and with some really talented people that were also kind enough to kind of lean in and help me from a personal point of view, help my own development. Great experience, got exposed to a lot of different opportunities. And in 2004, they were kind enough to offer us the opportunity to move to the US. Not a decision we had ever really contemplated. We'd been married for just under a year at that time. And actually, strangely, ended up being a really easy decision then.
Really?
I can remember us sitting down. It was around Christmas of 2003. And for what really was, a pretty significant kind of life-changing decision, I guess, it took us about 5 minutes. and we simply said to each other, if we don't go, we will always wonder what would have happened. And we don't want to be in a position where we sit here at whatever point in life and ask that question, let's go.
I love that thought. If we don't go, we'll wonder. And I had the similar experience when I was asked to go to the big project in Mexicali. And it was kind of like Peter had called and asked me like, hey, this would be a great opportunity for you. And I kind of went home and talked to my wife, and she kind of was like, yeah, let it rip. Let's go do it. So I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that you got here in 2004. And
So are we for sure. And I had a great experience with Balfour Beatty. Moved around with them a fair amount. We started off in Jacksonville, Florida. We're in Atlanta. We're in Dallas. And then in 2015, came across, got introduced to the opportunity Flinko and Alberisi, initially through Peter.
Mm-hmm.
I knew of Alberisi, I knew of Flinko. I didn't know them well, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I'd always been interested in the idea of working for a privately held company. I'd never had that experience. Okay. I'd only ever worked in publicly traded environments. So that was intriguing. There was some apprehension around that too, in that I'd never done it before. And I guess that also ended up being a really easy decision, in that I came up to St. Louis and spent, gosh, I think two and a half hours with John, mm-hmm. with Greg Kozik, with Greg Hesser, with Peter Kozik, and came out of that, what was initial kind of interview, getting to know the business, just knowing that they were people I wanted to work for.
Yeah.
And that really was the driver for that decision more than anything else. Of course, yeah, the role was of interest. I was excited by the opportunity, but really it came down to those four people I'd met and that being a representation of the culture that I believed I was going to be joining. And that just feeling like something I would be privileged and excited to be a part of. And I guess I sit here now, 10 years later, with that having been very, very true and, yeah, very good decision.
So when you think back to that meeting, think about what was it about those guys? You said there was something about the culture that was wanted to be the culture that you wanted to be a part of. When you think back to that meeting, what are the feelings that you get?
I think, I know John and Greg Kozik have both had a chance to spend time with you as well.
Yeah, they have.
And they talk about the values of the business, the overall culture of the business. And it was really their ability, just in a very genuine way, to be representative of that. The humility of all of them. They're all a very smart group of people as well. And that was interesting to me, that I felt like I would be challenged. I would be pushed to think about things in a different way. Just the caliber of people I was going to get to work with. The way they spoke about the organization, the long-term view of the organization, the long-term success, sustainability of it, how they thought about people, the development of people. All of those things just really, really resonated with me.
I can say that having been able to spend time with them on the podcast, I was very grateful for the opportunity just to hear the stories and hear what John had to say about his upbringing and why it became so important under his and Greg's leadership of how we're going to shape the company moving forward and building the culture, maintaining the culture of a family company that's doing multiple billion dollars worth of work a year. So I love to hear that story and hear you talk about that. When we think of what the CEO and president of Alberisi Corporation is, what does that include? That sounds really important. Tell me kind of what's under your umbrella, Richard. Like, what does that include?
So my role, the role that I am exceptionally privileged to have, is basically as CEO of Alberisi enterprise-wide.
Mm-hmm.
So the three main operating companies that we have, there's lots of other parts, important parts to the business, but those three main operating companies being Alberisi Constructors in the US, Alberisi Constructors up in Canada, and then Flinko as well. So it's working with the teams of all three parts of the organization across the breadth of the company. And really, Dan, I guess I see my role as to create an environment that provides people the opportunity to thrive. I think we have an incredibly talented group of people throughout the organization, very capable people, driven individuals that really care about the company. So my role is to make sure that we have created an environment that allows them to be successful, like I said, allows them to thrive, allows them to grow themselves, develop their careers in whatever that means to them personally, whatever their own aspirations are, but create an environment that gives them that development, gives them that opportunity. And to be honest, that really drives me,
mm-hmm.
in terms of just the desire to create that quality of opportunity for people. That's a big part of what I enjoy in the role.
Yeah, that's way more than just being kind of the person that sits at the top. I mean, I love to hear that you have that drive, that you want to create that environment, because that's what the environment of having opportunity, that's what keeps people interested. That's what wants to keep people here. That's something that John and Greg talked about also is that as the company grows and the industry grows, to keep the great people, you've got to keep them intrigued. You've got to keep them interested. And that's by providing those opportunities. So I'd love to hear that that's still on the forefront of what your goals are for the company. When you think about Alberici, what do you think makes our company great, makes the enterprise great?
It may sound like a slightly cliched answer, Dan, I know, but it's a truthful one, and that is the caliber of the people that we have. It really is. We put a lot of time and investment into making sure that we attract folks that will be a good fit for our business. And then, as I said before, hopefully then providing those people with really good opportunities to develop, to grow themselves in whatever their, like I said, their personal aspirations are. That's different for everybody. But if we get that right, if we maintain that standard in terms of who we are able to attract, who we, doesn't mean that that's right or wrong, or but just people that we represent a good fit for them, like it did for me. If we find people where they're attracted to that opportunity and then work with them well to help them grow, that will continue to sustain us, and that will continue to maintain the culture that people prior to me have worked hard to develop and formed. And that really is, for me, what makes the business special and makes me very appreciative to be a part of it.
Yeah, that is, it's definitely, having been at the career fair last week at A&M, talking to potential new hires and students, they said, you know, what makes Flintco great? And the answer is the people, right? It makes Alberici great too. And what makes the enterprise great is by having that opportunity, telling them, it's like, hey, I've never built the same job twice, but I've worked for good owners, worked for good people. And that's what makes us a great company.
Yeah, it's interesting when you say that. I remember, just kind of made me think about it, thinking back to when I did join Alberici Flintco at the time initially. I was, 47 at the time. And I remember sitting back and thinking about, okay, what do I really want from, if I'm going to take a new opportunity? And there was, all sorts of thoughts that crossed my mind about what I'd get to do, et cetera, et cetera. But ultimately, it came down to the caliber of people I was going to get to work with. Obviously, there are table stakes in that around ethics and character, et cetera. But that humility piece, that caliber of them, being challenged by them, being challenged to think about things in a different way, being stimulated in that way. I just really enjoy that about our business. I just get to work alongside really capable, really talented people that challenge me to think about things in a different way, challenge me to have a different perspective. That's very stimulating, very rewarding to be a part of that.
Yeah, Greg Kozik told a story when we sat down a couple months ago talking about when he and Greg Hesser were trying to figure out the whole Flintco acquisition. And they were, back and forth with what they perceived as a unsolvable problem, right? And they just happened to call John, and John provided a super simple answer that was, totally humble, totally, hey, have you looked at it this way? Have you thought of it like this? And they both said, no, we haven't, but that's a great idea, and maybe that's what we can do. So it's great to hear those stories, and it's great to hear that you're experiencing the same thing. When you perceive our business, last night when we were talking, you talked a little bit about what makes us successful and what causes us to fail. I want to kind of talk about that one more time. I think the way you said it was, when we're successful, it's because of our owners, and when we fail, it's because of ourselves. Why do you have that? That mentality?
Yeah, I think the way I think about it in terms of, as I referenced a little earlier, my own role is, like I said, creating that environment that allows people to thrive, to be successful, to do work that they find fulfilling, engaging, rewarding. I used to work for a guy, really good guy, that used to talk about people being at their best at the intersection of their passion and capability, and that it needed to be both. It needed to be something that you really felt was rewarding and fulfilling, that utilized your particular talents, capabilities really well. That's when people really excelled. And I think the way I really think about it is, if we are successful, it will be because of others.
Yeah.
If I create the environment that allows that to happen for the talented people throughout our organization, that will drive us to be successful. And so we will be successful because of them. We will be successful because of the people I am surrounded by, not because mm-hmm. of me.
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't create that environment, if I don't provide the right guidance around that, the right inputs to it, the right structure that allows that environment to occur, that will be my fault.
Mm-hmm.
And so we will fail because of me. We will succeed because of others. That is kind of how I think about it and the role that I have.
I think it really is. That makes a lot of sense. I said owners earlier. I meant others. But when you think about others as being a guy that has sat on a job site and managed people and managed trade partners and even the owner, when it gets to the end of the job, it's really not me. You know, it's really everybody else. And you have to understand, like, it's because of these people that are turning wrenches and swinging hammers and using screw guns and putting insulation on ductwork and all that kind of stuff that allows us to succeed, right? And if you can't create that environment as a leader that allows other people to succeed, it definitely is on you. And it's a great way to think of it. And all you young folks that are listening today, remember that.
I'd really echo that, Dan, if I could, in terms of, I think if you have both the aspiration and you are fortunate enough, as I have been, to end up in various leadership positions through the course of your career, staying grounded, I guess,
mm-hmm.
to the point you were making, is really important. And I want to stress the first part of this. It is a team effort. It is everybody throughout the organization playing their roles to the best of their ability. That I know Greg talks about that focus on excellence, and I love the way he speaks about that. If everybody, it does take everybody in the organization to do that. That's what makes us successful. At the same time, if you look at it through the lens of the clients that we work for,
mm-hmm.
it is the work that we are undertaking on project sites day in, day out, that they recognize the value that's being created. There is a team of people that sits behind that, that helps enable that. But ultimately, yeah, I have this habit when I do project site visits of saying to folks, because I mean it,
yeah,
we get paid for what you do, not what I do.
Mm.
And I don't ever lose sight of that. And so it is a team effort, but the role is to then figure out how, from a collaborative point of view and from an alignment point of view, we come together to deliver that value that the client recognizes in the actual work that we undertake. And I think as you go through leadership positions, like I said, you've got to stay anchored around that. You've got to stay grounded around that and recognize the role you have to play is, yeah, I guess to use that expression, that servant leadership approach in mm-hmm. terms of support of that, the facilitation of that, the enablement of that, and not go down a path where perhaps you start to think it's, I don't know, about you, I guess.
Yeah, I think the way you described your meeting with John, Peter, Greg, and Greg, and think about people you wanted to work for because of their humility. I mean, you fit right in that group, Richard. I mean, when I think of that group of people, you naturally belong in there. The fact that you are grounded and the fact that you can still see that and still tell people that, it's tremendous. And it gives me great hope for our organization, Enterprise, to continue for many, many years. As president and CEO, you think about your plan looking forward, right? You've been in this role a year, year-ish?
A year. Yep.
Yeah, so when you think about looking forward, tell us what you feel about looking forward and maybe what is the obligation to the Alberisi legacy in your plan for the enterprise moving forward?
Good question, Dan. Legacy is definitely, I feel the weight of that in a good way, in a healthy way.
Sure. Good.
I think the first thing I would recognize is just the good fortune I had to follow on from both Greg and Peter, as well as all of the teams that surrounded them, just as the same as I said, you know, me sitting in this seat, it's not about me, it's about the rest of the organization. That's equally true of the time that they served. Mm-hmm. At the same time, they did also, between the two of them, leave an incredibly strong foundation that I inherited from them. Mm-hmm. And I'm very appreciative of that. And I see my role, I talk sometimes about us building from strength. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Greg Hesse has a nice expression about standing on the shoulders of others. Mm-hmm. I might be misquoting slightly, but something like that, which also really resonates with me. So how can I help continue to develop the organization, to grow the organization from that position of strength as we go forward in a way that continues to align with the values and the culture that we have? It has to be, I do think growth, I think Greg made this point when he was talking, growth is important because growth represents momentum. Mm. And you need momentum to continue to be able to provide the right caliber and quality of opportunities for the folks that we are hopeful able to attract into our business. If we don't continue to have that momentum, we won't be able to provide them the right caliber of opportunities. It just, there won't be the spots to do that. So growth does matter. That momentum matters, but it's not growth for the sake of it. It's responsible growth. It's thoughtful growth. That means as we go through that, we are good custodians. I think Greg, John used the word stewards sometime, but good custodians, good stewards of the business, of this thing that is bigger than us that we have responsibility for a period of time, to make sure that when we in turn pass it on to the next leadership team that comes through, we have maintained that cultural reference point, we've maintained those values, and hopefully through our period, we've continued to enhance the business, continue to develop the business, and give them an even stronger platform still for them to then take forward. So yeah, the weight of that legacy definitely sits on me. But like I said, in a way that I think is healthy.
Well, I think it is. It's good to have that, I don't want to say fear, but like the healthy fear of just making sure that we continue to grow and continue to provide those opportunities. How do you instill some of that into the other leadership at Alberisi, whether it's the senior vice presidents or market leaders or those type things? And how do you see that continuing to grow amongst them?
In terms of the values and cultural piece and that alignment around our role as custodians, as stewards, the easy answer, Dan, is I don't have to, because it's naturally who they are. And I am very fortunate in terms of the team I get to work with day in, day out. They all are wired that way. They represent the values that we have, I think, very well. And so there's a natural alignment around that. I think it then becomes our roles collectively between that team to figure out, well, what do we do with that? How do we apply that? How do we make the best use of that? And I do think that's where alignment is a word I think about a lot. Cohesion is a word I think about a lot. I try not to use too many, but I do use sports analogies occasionally. You can have a team of really capable, really talented, high caliber individuals that don't perform well together, that will be outplayed by a better organized team that on paper at least may seem to be less fortunate in terms of the individual talents that they have within it. I think for us, we have the ability to have both. We have incredibly talented individuals within the organization, and so we have to provide the right level of alignment, guidance, clarity, direction as part of that environment that allows them to thrive. We have folks that are very capable. They don't need to be micromanaged. They don't need to have that kind of heavy oversight. But they do need to have clarity about what we're trying to do and understanding about where we're trying to aim, the priorities that we have. That's part of creating that right environment for them.
Yeah, the clarity piece is great too. I like the alignment. I like the cohesion, the clarity. All of that speaks to just expectations and clearly communicated expectations. And whether that's at a job site level or a corporate level or even just kind of middle management type level, I mean, it goes for all of us, right? Doing the small things to make sure the big things happen the way you want them to.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting, as you kind of move into leadership, mm-hmm. finding the balance between creating a really collaborative environment, creating an environment where people genuinely believe they have a voice. We talk sometimes at the team I work with about healthy conflict in terms of debating with each other, disagreeing with each other, simply because better ideas will come from that. Healthy conflict, hopefully doing that in a thoughtful way and a respectful way, but being very comfortable to not agree, to debate. And if you create that right collaborative environment, it drives that. And I do think we are a business that is naturally very collaborative. I think it's poor English, but I do sometimes say we are the least siloed business I've ever worked in. But you also, I think it's as you kind of have the good fortune of doing these roles, you can't overreach with that to the point where you try to find consensus. I think if you try to lead through consensus, that's a really negative impact on a business, because the pace that will cause you to move at becomes unnecessarily slow.
Mm.
And sometimes you can't find consensus. You can look for it. You can look for common ground. But ultimately, I think you can overcorrect in that way. So finding that balance between a truly collaborative environment, people feeling comfortable that they really do have a voice, but not overcorrecting to the point where you end up just slowing the business down and becoming overly bureaucratic, overly consensus-driven. There's a fine line there.
Yeah, I think that also plays into burnout when you think about, I mean, every role. If it's a consensus, it's got to be a consensus before we move forward, or I don't have a voice, or nobody ever asked my opinion. I mean, it leads to burnout. It leads to people not feeling like they're a part. It leads to them feeling like this isn't a great organization because nobody ever listens to what I say. And I think it's important to keep that at the forefront. I love to hear that you're keeping it at the forefront and making sure that everybody has a voice in that healthy conflict. Sometimes people, even when they're asked their opinion, they don't want to speak up because they don't want to be against the consensus. But I've always been best idea wins. You know,
when
we're in a bind at the job site, it's like, hey, we're going to bring everybody in. And if the intern has the right answer, by God, we're using the intern's answer. Yeah. We're going to figure out a way to move forward because we're all not going to agree, or we're going to sit here for 2 weeks and not agree. And guess what? Now we're 2 weeks behind schedule. All good things, all good things. One of the things that is big here for us in Austin is really workforce development. You know, something that we've taken some ownership in and working with SkillPoint Alliance and working with Del Valle, the CTE program at their high school, and really trying to help shape folks that are impressionable, that are in middle school, high school, that when they come out into the industry that, hey, you know, there's a need for some trade folks. There's a need for folks that are doing the work, right? And how's Alberisi taking a look at that and playing a part in that in our market?
If I step back from that for a second, Dan, I do think as an industry, historically, we probably have attracted a relatively narrow demographic, I guess is the best way I can say it.
Yeah.
And there are lots of efforts underway currently by lots of our peer group industry-wide to try and improve that over time. And I think it is having an impact in terms of just the breadth of people that we are able to attract and convince that construction is a great industry to be a part of, which I truly believe it is. There's lots of really rewarding, fulfilling jobs within it. But that will take time. That's not an overnight thing. So we need to play our part in that. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of programs around the enterprise overall in terms of high school outreach, college outreach. I do think the within reason, the earlier those conversations start, the better.
Mm-hmm.
As people are kind of forming their own ideas about the path that they want to go down. And that within that, recognizing the craft opportunities within our industry are really good quality opportunities. Mm-hmm. If that's the right fit for somebody, there's real value to those. There's real meaning to that work. And they can provide roles for people that have a lot of satisfaction to them, a lot of weight to them, a lot of meaning to them. And mm-hmm. that being, I think, valued appropriately is something that we need to play our part in and help with. And I do think that is changing over time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when you walk around job sites now, you can see the effect of that work that's starting to show up more
mm-hmm.
in terms of the breadth of people that we're able to attract. Like I said, convinced that this is a really great industry to be part of.
Yeah, I think it is too. And we've talked about it a little bit in the past when you talk about, the generation that holds a lot of the knowledge of the old ways to do things and kind of, before we've got some of the new technologies that we're using today, some of those guys are aging out, and it's really, now's the time for folks to get in and be able to learn from kind of the old school folks, because there's a happy medium between the old school way and between the way we do things today. So I'd love to see that and hear that we have those programs reaching out. Some of the folks at Del Valle talked about, even having a speaking opportunity at a middle school and be able to explain to somebody, like, do you understand like what it could be like in this industry? And maybe that's young. I knew at a young age I wanted to be a builder. I knew at a young age that this is something, like you said earlier, that's tangible, that you can be a part of, you can put your hands on, and it's a team effort. So those folks listening, we need you. When you think from a global perspective, AI has taken over, I would say the industry, maybe not our industry, but so many people, the data centers are piling up, everybody uses ChatGPT, or Grok or whatever they're using right now. How do you see AI kind of impacting our industry? And do you feel like it's stealing jobs, or do you feel like it's making us efficient, or kind of what's your take on it right now?
Maybe I'll talk a little bit about innovation more broadly, and then I'll come back to AI as a part of that.
Sure.
That conversation earlier around excellence, again, referencing back to Greg's kind of comments around that, I think part of our culture is and has always been around that focus on excellence in everything that we do. I think part of excellence, a piece of that, is also about staying current. What mm-hmm. excellence looks like today in terms of the work we undertake is different to what excellence looked like 30 years ago. Talented people
sure.
in both instances, but the tools available to them, the methods available to them, have moved on. And so you have to stay current, I guess, as part of that focus on excellence. And I'd like to think one of our strengths as an organization is that, I think Greg says, fanatical
mm-hmm. yeah,
obsession with
yeah.
excellence. And I like that. I do. That resonates with me.
Yeah.
So to do that, if we're going to stay true to that, like I said, part of that is staying current. It doesn't mean that you need to be at the bleeding edge of everything, but it also means you can't just ignore what is happening around you and not embrace that and make sure that it's part of your organization. So we do have a real focus on innovation more broadly. As you know, just over a year ago, we brought in our first chief innovation officer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part of that investment, part of that desire to make sure that we do stay current in an industry that is, I think, ever more the focus of, primarily through the lens of technology, but technology is an enabler for innovation. It's not innovation itself. But we are on the radar of lots of businesses. There's lots of investment being made around technology. There's lots of things coming at us. So we really need to get organized around how we approach that, how we adopt it, how we scale it. And that's not an easy thing to do, but it's something we really need to make sure we do well. As a subset of that, AI, I think, in our industry has the potential to really bring a lot of value. I think typically when people talk about AI, at least at a surface level, there's a tendency to go towards the elimination of roles, the replacement of jobs by AI, how administrative type tasks might be taken over. And sometimes that brings a degree of concern.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be some industries out there where that is true. I wouldn't claim to know them well enough to speak to that, but I can imagine there are some where that is the case.
Mm-hmm.
I think for us, it is much more about AI being an enabler, an enhancement, a force multiplier of the people that we have within our business. And that, I think, at a simple level, takes two forms potentially. One is just through easing the administrative load of mm-hmm. what we have to do. Like all businesses, in addition to the actual things we produce, there's an administration that goes along with that. And to the extent we can make that as simple as possible, as easy as possible, to free up time of the people that we have to focus in other areas, of course, that's beneficial. But also when you talked about that generational transfer of knowledge, I do think AI has potentially a very interesting role to play there if we get it right. I believe, I don't know, maybe I'm just old. Well, I am old, but maybe I'm also old school. There's no question I'm old.
Yeah.
I still believe that the best way to learn, the best way that I learned, was by working with people, alongside people that were kind enough to take the time to, I guess, kind of put an arm around me and help me, guide me, just being around really good quality people and having the sense, I guess, to listen and observe and watch and try and learn from them. I do think that's still the most powerful way to learn.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we are moving into a period where we can maybe supplement that, support that, help that through the capture of knowledge and the access to knowledge through AI that people can reference more easily than perhaps traditionally the way that they've been able to. And I think if we can get that right, that's going to be a really powerful component of how we help transition that generational knowledge from one group to the next.
There's a lot to unpack there in what you just said. I'm thinking of a story. I was in a presentation a couple of weeks ago when a gentleman that was a doctor, heart doctor, was talking about when you get a heart scan, that a good heart doctor is going to spend 2 to 4 hours reading that scan and trying to figure out where challenges could be using his knowledge and what he's seen or what they've seen. And there's a program that's developed now that can read your heart scan in 8 minutes, and it can tell you anything and everything that could be wrong, right? And there's still a part and piece of somebody that's needed to actually read that information, but it is having access, capturing and accessing the knowledge like you talked about. It's a little bit easier to find now, and you can read the 8-minute summary, and then maybe you can examine for 30 minutes and come up with a solution. But relating it to our business, we talked last night just about, is AI going to replace an entry-level position here at Albarese or here at Flintco? And I think the overwhelming answer is no, right? You can't just graduate from college and go straight to being a project manager, or you can't just graduate from trade school and go straight to being a superintendent. Like there is this hands-on piece of the equation that's irreplaceable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good thing for young folks that are listening or in college and thinking, am I ever going to be able to get a job? Yes, you will. I promise. Because there is still somebody that needs to learn the things, that can run the work, that can be a good manager and understand finances, understand scheduling, understand actually how to build, it's really not attainable. I mean, that knowledge is, you can probably find it somewhere in AI or ChatGPT, but it's really not going to be what's going to get you to the next level.
And I think then we have the potential, if you take that entry level position as an example, that experience that you gain by working your way through those circumstances is always going to be valuable. But I think we can make that journey more effective for people,
mm-hmm.
because the process that you go through to gather the information, to generate the knowledge, to then make a judgment, it's the knowledge and judgment piece of that where you're learning, the process that you go through to just simply gather the information, yes. in the first place. Perhaps initially, you know, if I think of my own experiences, yeah, there is value in even in that, in simply working your way through it.
Mm-hmm.
But the value of that diminishes very quickly by the time you've gone through that. You know, again, I'm of an age where some of those processes were very manual when I was first started. Yeah, by the time you've done that two or three times, the benefit of doing that starts to definitely wane.
Yes.
So if we can speed up that piece of it and allow the folks that we bring in to therefore spend more on their time on the knowledge generation piece, on the judgment piece, and building that element of that experience, then that's where we have the opportunity, like I said, to make that journey for them much more effective. And therefore, I think it's something we should lean into and embrace in a way that works for us. But it really can have value if we do that well.
What about new markets? Are there's new things, as you talk about trying to create this environment for opportunity, which allows people to thrive? Are there things we're looking at that you can share that people listening might want to know about or might think, hey, man, that's a great opportunity and I want to get in on the front end of that?
I think we have a long-term strategy that I inherited from others, but I am a strong advocate for, that the breadth of markets that we serve,
mm-hmm.
brings us resiliency.
Mm-hmm.
We are in an industry that at times is cyclical. I think that will reasonably continue. You know, there's always going to be ebbs and flows to the economy that we work in. And when economies slow down, the ability to defer capital expenditure becomes a potential lever for people to pull that mm-hmm. may be comparatively easier than other levers they could pull. And so we tend to be impacted by that. So in that cyclical environment, it is rare for all markets to be down at the same time. So we continue to look for other market expansion opportunities that will grow our portfolio further. And the fact that we are able to service that breadth of markets within an organization that has that really collaborative approach to it, that comes together in a really effective, cooperative way to pivot to whatever element of the market may be in a healthier state at any given moment in time. That's a really important part of our strategy. And yeah, we're always looking to build on that. And for sure, we have some kind of on the radar at the moment, as we always do,
mm-hmm.
Where we believe those markets are, will value the skill sets that we bring, will be, you know, hopefully we can provide good service and move into.
I know one of the most recent markets we moved into is renewables, and we just had the BDELT call here the other day for Flintco, and hearing the update from Devin and what's going on in the renewable, it seems like that was a really good shift, a really good opportunity to get into a new market, and I think we're going to reap the benefits of that for a long time.
Yeah, it's a good example, I think, of a market that was absolutely brand new to us.
Mm-hmm.
We were probably later to than others, but we believe there was still room for us and that the skill sets that we had from other markets we served would be applicable and would help us be successful. And thanks to the team of folks that have led that effort. And again, that's a great example of a very collaborative effort across the enterprise as a whole. We're still early in that journey, but we've had a lot of really good success already. And yeah, I feel good about where that will go in the future.
Absolutely. As we think about young folks that could be listening today, what's some advice you could give to them coming into a great enterprise like we have, or even just the construction industry altogether?
Gosh, that's a big question, Dan. I guess I guess if I think back on my own experience and for what it's worth, things that have served me well, I've always tried to, it's a little bit of a cliched comment, but have a learning mindset in terms of being open to new experiences, new opportunities, just the breadth of things that I was exposed to. As I referenced earlier, very fortunate to have worked with throughout my career. I really have been some just really talented people, really capable people that were kind enough to help me as a as an individual. So I guess I've said yes a lot to different opportunities that have come up. And yeah, that's a very personal decision for people around family, environment. There's lots of things that weigh into that. For me personally, doing that has served me well. And really allowed some exciting opportunities personally in terms of the things I've been involved with. I think if you are then, if you have, again, the aspiration and the opportunity to move into a leadership position, keeping that humility, as we talked about earlier, really getting to know your people, really connecting with them. You know, trust is so important in any relationship, including the relationships we have within the workplace. And trust has to be earned. Doesn't matter what title you have, what role you're in. You don't get that as a prerequisite when you step into it. You've got to earn it. And you earn it by getting to know people, by taking the time to invest in them, to get to know them personally, to form those relationships with them. That's the foundation of the trust that you need to have. And that in turn then allows you to be that steward of the organization, allows you to collaborate with them, to drive the accountability that we look for, the focus on excellence we look for. All of those things come from a foundation of trust. And again, that trust comes from a foundation of the connections and relationships that you build.
I love the use of the word steward. You know, that's a word that carries great weight when I think of it. It's more than just like a caregiver, but it's like somebody that's, I feel like, is invested, and they're, it's like, hey, this is definitely my cause to help push this operation forward, help push the organization, push the enterprise, and taking care of yourself, but also taking care of your people, right? And understanding your people. I think that that lies with the whole conversation we talked about having a voice. Like if your people can't trust you, they're not going to want to speak up. Or if you can't trust them, you're not going to let them speak up, perhaps, you know. And it's one of those things is that knowing your people, understanding your people creates a community, which creates an opportunity to excel. All good points, all good pieces of advice for somebody that's coming in. The learning mindset, that's somebody asked me last week at the career fair, what can I do if I get a job with y'all? I said, just have an open mind. Come in and ask questions. Like we were all, one of the kids came up and said, I said kids, one of the college students came up and said, you know, I'm sorry, I don't have any experience. And I said, we all started where you did.
Yeah.
Like we all started there, but you're in the right place. You're meeting the right people. Have a learning mindset when you come in. I love it. What about if you could pinpoint like a favorite memory since you've been here over the last 10 years, is there something that stands out? Maybe it's a project, maybe it's a win, maybe it's a hire or landing somebody. Is there something that stands out for you that's kind of a marquee moment for you?
I don't know if I would highlight an individual moment. I think as an experience, the things I probably enjoy the most are when we are able to provide promotional opportunities for folks within the business. When I was referenced about a year ago, exceptionally fortunate to be asked to step into this role. That was part of a series of changes at the time. I think in total we had 8, if I remember rightly, internal promotions.
Yeah.
And I love those moments. I love when I see us creating opportunity for folks to take that next step and that they've reached the point where they feel ready to do that. We're able to go on that journey with them. I think that is, yeah, it's just a very rewarding part of the role when you see people hopefully spend, you know, significant components of their career with us. We have to earn that right every day. That's not a given. But if we can do that, if we can get folks to entrust us with their careers, when you see, can then over time, yeah, and at 10 years, I'm a newbie, mm-hmm. right, in terms of how long I've been here. But I've still had some of that experience when you see folks that have really grown through the organization and developed their careers, had lots of opportunities. It's just a really rewarding, really satisfying thing to see.
Mm-hmm. I think back to the company call we had the other day, and they talked about the folks that were promoted inside Flintco over the last couple months, whether they're area manager positions, general manager, senior VP. It was a proud moment for me seeing that too, being associated with those people and being like, yeah, we're in really good hands at this point, you know, and I love that we promote from within and that we bring people up that have spent time here and have been invested. I think of Danny Moschel. I've known Danny for a long time, went to APG with him some 11 years ago, and seeing his name up there as the area manager from Memphis, it was like, my man, way to go, Danny. Like, yeah. Super proud of him. And same thing, Chris Moyes, right? Chris was, when he started, I remember him starting here. It's like, man, that guy's got some shake. He's going to be in good shape if he stays here for a while. So there is, proud myself to see other people excel, which is, says something a lot about our company and our industry. I want to jump back to you for a little bit. I want to talk a little bit more about you and maybe what you do for fun. Like, what are the things that Richard does when he's not creating opportunities for us?
Family first and foremost. Mm-hmm. Very fortunate. Been married for 22 years now. What's that old expression about out of your league? I definitely...
outkick the coverage.
Yeah, I definitely traded up. And so, yeah, we've got a son that's just started college as well. So that's been fun watching him begin his own journey. He's a lot better 19-year-old than I was. So that's very pleasing to see. But yeah, that's family first and foremost is a real source of enjoyment. And we really enjoy spending time together. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, in terms of things I do kind of independently as hobbies, I guess, I do enjoy both running and cycling a lot. Mm-hmm. Still ride motorbikes a little bit, not as much as I used to, but they're all things I enjoy.
Running and cycling. Yeah, you know, Greg told this great story about riding from the Mediterranean to the Atlantic. I mean, tell me you've done something like that.
Yeah, Greg Kozik and actually Greg Hesser are both responsible for my cycling journey, I guess, when I moved up to St. Louis in 2017. Uh-huh. And they kind of got me interested in that and really helped me get started too, which I appreciated. But yeah, I've come to really enjoy it. I've run for a long time, mm-hmm. I guess all my life, I guess. but cycling's been a more recent development. I think when I got back on a bike in 2018, I probably hadn't ridden a bike since, well, apart from occasionally, you know, with our son and stuff. Not on a regular basis since I was a kid myself.
Yeah.
So it's been really good fun. And I've had opportunities to do some really interesting rides. Greg and I together, actually, which we're very, very fortunate to do. We've ridden across the Italian Alps together. We've ridden across the French Alps together.
Wow.
They were both really, really interesting experiences. Beautiful places to see.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a lot of fun.
That's awesome. That's really good. We talked last night, you kind of shared a little peek into kind of your personal life and kind of what drives you and kind of your mantra and kind of what you tell yourself every day to motivate yourself. Can you share that with us?
Well, I guess I have to now, Dan.
Yeah, you do. Or we could edit it out. I think it's great, though. I think it's a great story, and I think it'll show a lot about you and how people will see you and understand.
I'll have to remember, if I do this again, to be careful what I tell you at dinner the night before. But no, all joking aside, yeah, I guess we all have our own kind of ways of just kind of finding the right balance around our lives and how we approach them. And yeah, I do. I have this little mantra that I say every morning to myself. I guess I'm a relatively routine-driven individual, so mm-hmm. I get up at either 4:30 or 4:45 every morning to go work out. I have to do that to have any hope of keeping up with Greg when we do these different events together. And then typically after I've worked out, and then I stretch a lot because I'm an old man, I have a little mantra I say to myself, which is, calm, unencumbered, present, joyful and grateful. And then with a strong influence from my father, I throw in, he didn't say it this way, but I throw in a carpe diem or seize the day at the end of it. That was a really strong mindset that he tried to instill in me, that I have at least attempted to provide a good example to our son in the hope that he kind of continues that approach. In that the only thing you are certain of every day is you only get that day once. So make the most of it, appreciate it, be intentional about it, be present in it. Yeah, that's that was a strong influence from him.
It's a great thought, though, and each one of those is a great thought, because there's so many opportunities to get wound up and to be encumbered, and to there's so many distractions where you don't want to be present, or there's a moment that you're robbed of your joy. And I think those are really good reminders for anybody to think about, and especially the carpe diem, like seize the day. You said it, you only get this day one time, right? We're only going to get September 25th one time this year. So
I think it's so easy. You know, life gets busy for all of us between, you know, family commitments, work, just the time that we live in. There's lots of distractions. There's lots of things that can take you out of the moment. And that's very understandable. It's not an easy thing to do, but just having that reference point to come back and be present, be in the moment that you're in. For me personally, that's something I find beneficial and a rewarding kind of mindset to try and do. Not that I always get that right, I'm sure, but to try and live by that.
In closing, some of the words I wrote down while we talked today was excellence, alignment, cohesion, environment to thrive, humility, grounded, knowing your people, and creating this great environment. I think those are all great things. And Richard, they're great things that you embody and that you bring to the organization. I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for your time here today. Thanks for coming in. Thanks for the chat. And thanks for revealing a little bit about yourself so our people can get to know you more.
No, I appreciate the opportunity, Dan. That's kind of you to say. I am, as I've said a number of times through this, I know, but very, very grateful for just the caliber of people that I get to work with every day, the caliber of people we have throughout our organization. It makes for me, this a really special place to be. And I'm, very appreciative of that.
I'm right there with you. I'm grateful to be here too. Richard, it's been fun. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Dan.
You bet. It's been such a long